This is the Voice of Literacy, where literacy researchers, teachers, principals, parents, and policymakers share and discuss how literacy research informs practice. Join the biweekly podcast and discussion forums. My name is Dr. Betsy Baker, Professor of Literacy Studies at the University of Missouri.
This week we hear from Dr. Bridget Dalton, Assistant Professor in Teaching and Learning at Vanderbilt's Peabody College of Education. She does research involving reading comprehension, vocabulary, and a web-based tool called ICON, I-C-O-N. Welcome, Dr. Dalton.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
We're glad to have you here. First, tell us about yourself and how you got interested in ICON, and maybe even tell us what ICON is.
Sure. ICON is the title for a web-based, universally designed, supported reading environment that I developed in collaboration with colleagues at CAST, as well as Boston College and Harvard. And so I want to acknowledge at the outset Patrick Proctor and Paolo Uccelli and Kristen Robinson and Jay View, as well as Catherine Snow. I got involved in this because I've had a longstanding interest in struggling readers and the role of technology in supporting students so that everybody is succeeding and able to learn with text.
And you refer to universal design. What does that mean?
Universal design for learning is a framework for designing digital learning experiences so that you're thinking about the needs of the broadest range of users from the outset. You know, what we do in education all too often is that we design for the average student, and then we think about all the ways that we have to fix it so that it works for students across the spectrum. Universal Design for Learning originated at CAST. David Rose and Ann Meyer are the founders of that. And I had the wonderful opportunity of working at CAST for several years, leading projects where we connected the what we know about effective literacy instruction with principles of universal design.
So, abbreviation, what does CAST stand for?
CAST is the Center for Applied Technology. It's an R&D organization just north of Boston.
And in this study, you worked with English monolingual students and bilingual students. Was the universal design somehow meeting those needs? Explain that.
Exactly. We'd done some earlier research in classrooms with middle school students where we had a significant percentage of struggling readers, and we embedded reciprocal teaching within award-winning novels such as Hatchet by Paulson, and we found that we got good results with those students, but that the vocabulary piece of it was challenging, and for our English language learners within that group, that they needed more support than what we were providing. And so my colleague Patrick Proctor, who is an expert in bilingualism, as well as Paolo Uccelli and Catherine Snow, we worked together to expand the framework so that we could provide supports for English language learners. So that included the translation of the text and all of the instructional supports in Spanish. So if you think about it, if you're a Spanish speaker, if that's your first language and you're developing your second language in English, if you're able to leverage your first language knowledge, then you have a better chance of improving your English competency. So from a universal design perspective, since English language learners were a significant presence in our classrooms, as well as classrooms across the United States, we wanted to build in scaffolds and supports for those learners.
Yeah. And in your article, you say the usual gap in performance between English monolingual mm-hmm. bilingual students disappeared in vocabulary and combination groups. That sounds huge.
Right. And our for kids who were working within the environment where we were using our researcher-designed measures, we found that the growth and the performance for the bilingual students was comparable. But what it didn't do, and this is, it didn't accelerate their learning. And when you think about reducing achievement gaps, you know, we were happy that they were performing comparably, and in some cases, I think there was one example where the bilingual learners' growth rate was actually stronger than the monolinguals. But if we're going to eliminate that achievement gap between monolingual English and bilingual students, we're going to have to figure out a way to accelerate.
Right.
But this was an environment where We felt that it leveled the playing field for students, and not just monolingual versus bilingual, but also our struggling readers, which overlapped, of course, with our bilingual group, but they also were obtaining comparable growth rates.
Yeah, exciting work. So now that you've done this work, what would you tell teachers?
Well, I think this work is important, not because of the particular intervention, but for what it represents. What it represents is the value of designing digital text and learning environments so that they're just-in-time supports for learners. So depending on what your needs are, what your interests are, you're going to get the support you need. So as teachers are thinking about purchasing programs or using ebooks and iPads and digital text in the classroom, take a look at what kinds of embedded learning supports they have. How are they addressing strategic reading and reading for understanding? How are they building in supports for language and for vocabulary? So I would hope that teachers would go beyond just accepting digital ebooks as they're presented, and look to see what kinds of learning supports are there.
It reminds me of some of Linda Labeau and Kuhn's work that used to talk about a lot of the bells and whistles were distracting.
Right. There, I think particularly with some of the commercial programs for very young children, you've still got a lot of distracting bells and whistles. And there's a fair amount of research that shows that when the animation and the sound and the learning supports are consistent with the learning goals, that they improve comprehension. And they certainly, across this work, tend to improve students' engagement with the text. I mean, we've seen that consistently, not just in this ICON study, but in all of our work, that students are eager to learn in these kinds of environments, and we want to take advantage of that.
And that might tie in well. What do you tell parents?
Well, I think for parents, I would take advantage of the mobile devices and the such as cell phones and iPads and gaming devices, and encourage your children to read in those contexts. They're you know, with the Kindle and the Nook, children can read and listen to novels, so that you can develop their interest and get them hooked on reading in these contexts. You know, sometimes parents think that if kids are listening to the book, that they're not developing as a reader. And I would say that's not the case at all. Not only are they benefiting from listening to the text in terms of improving language and vocabulary and comprehension, but they're also developing as readers and getting to know who they are as readers, what they enjoy reading. All of that's critical to becoming successful in lots of different kinds of reading contexts.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. What do you tell principals who are providing leadership in schools, who are maybe trying to make decisions with a very small budget of, do we buy more textbooks, do we buy Kindles and Nooks? What do you tell principals, what do you tell policymakers?
Right. I think for principals, there are lots of different levels of technology integration, and I wouldn't necessarily focus on the expensive school-wide comprehensive literacy programs. I would be strategic about what the learning needs are of my students, and focus on a suite or a smorgasbord, if you will, of technology tools and programs that would help accomplish those goals. Certainly, that has to come with teacher professional development and technology access. You know, teachers aren't going to be successful if they're not getting support around using the technology in their classrooms. And I just read this morning an article in eSchool News that was reporting on a recent survey of teachers, where a number one priority is they want to differentiate instruction for their students. They understand that's essential, and they see technology as part of the solution. And I would advocate that as well for principals. Think about technology as a solution in your schools, and be kind of strategic in going after that at multiple levels.
Yeah, and what a wonderful way, especially in providing, like you say, the professional development needed. I I work with teachers all the time who just say, you know, this technology showed up in my room, but I have no idea why to use it or how to use it.
Exactly, exactly. Teachers are so eager to do this, and they just need some support.
And policymakers, what do you tell them?
Policymakers, I think when I think about where the leverage points are there, certainly the standards and the assessments have to reflect a more integrated, comprehensive view of the role of technology and new media. So I think that has to evolve. Right now, the release of the Common Core Standards, which is having some influence, they've got a very general view of the role of technology in media. I'd like to see that more operationalized in relation to the different content domains. I think providing sufficient hardware and broadband access so that it's not the case that we're simply counting the number of computers per school, but we're really looking at, well, what's the quality of technology that's available, and how in legislation can we support and celebrate and learn from those schools and teachers where it's working and where it's making a difference in children's lives.
Well, and your work indicates, you know, that it's a good bang for their buck if they really can choose the right technologies for the right reasons.
Exactly, exactly.
Where are we going from here? What research are you doing next, and what can we be following you in?
Well, there are a couple of directions. I'm working right now on the integration of multimodal comprehension, which is what's happening in these new digital reading environments, and linking it to multimodal expression, because you know, text now it's an interactive text, it's multimodal, and students' opportunity to not just read and respond, but to create using multimodal tools, I think opens up new opportunities for learning and engagement, but also better prepares them for, as what Don Liu calls, their literacy futures. Right now, there's a significant gap between the way we engage with literacy and knowledge and other folks out there beyond the school walls, and we need to bring that into schools.
Now, what do you mean when you say multimodal?
Multimodal means the combination of different modes of communication. So in schools, we tend to privilege verbal discussion, reading of printed text, and writing with words. So for multimodal composition, we're opening that up so that students are creating with sound and color and background, as well as words. And what we're seeing is that when you expand the communication palette that way, that it opens up opportunities for students. And oftentimes, students who don't like to write or don't regard themselves as successful writers are finding new ways in to be storytellers and communicators in this context.
Dr. Bridget Dalton from Vanderbilt University, we thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
You can find Dr. Dalton's research in the Journal of Literacy Research, Volume 43, Issue 1. This podcast is now available from iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as our website, www.voiceofliteracy.org, where you can find a link to this article and additional work done by Dr. Dalton. We invite you to join online discussions of this and other podcast episodes, peruse a schedule of upcoming topics and guests, and pose questions for those guests. This broadcast marks the conclusion of another successful season for the Voice of Literacy. This season, we enjoyed nearly 80,000 of you coming to our website, listening to, downloading, and sharing our podcasts. We hope you'll continue to spread the word and listen to recent and previous podcasts. We'll be back the first Monday of September with new episodes. I'm Dr. Betsy Baker, and this is the Voice of Literacy.